by midnight tonight, because I would like you to do it, just because I want you to know the information on it. So, if you go down to quiz two, which is on the week four, I think, or five, I'm not sure where it is. Yeah, week four. If you get that into me by midnight tonight, I'll give you half credit, and half credit is better than no credit. So try to get it to me. Okay? So, what I want to look at today is the presentation on logical if structures. So if you would click on that. So basically what we're going to be talking about is if statements. And there is a assignment that I've answered added that's basically a test quiz, whatever you want to call it. It's not one of the quick quizzes. I will take it late. I don't want it late, but I will take it late because I want everybody to do it. So just do that. It's supposedly due next Thursday. Try to get it in next Thursday. Again, late doesn't count on individual things. Late counts on the 10% of your grade for being a responsible student, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're late on that, you're going to lose something on that 10%, you know, maybe 1 point or something. But eventually, if you're late on enough things, you end up hurting over there. Okay, so this is an if statement, and what I'm doing here is showing the flowchart and the pseudocode. Pseudocode is fake code, basically. What pseudocode is it's the code, but you don't have to worry about the language rules. So you're just writing out more your thought process than you are worrying about the language rules. So, with a flowchart, a decision is put in a diamond, and there are two possibilities, yes and no. And at the bottom, you join the yes and the no together, which is basically the end if you're writing it in pseudocode. So I said, if amount is greater than 5,000, then do a calculation. And it's the same thing in the pseudocode, if amount is greater than 5,000, do a calculation. And then I have the end if. Now, when we've been doing access, the if statements that we have looked at have not had an else, because they've been decisions about whether to display the record or not. And so we would look at the criteria, and if it met the criteria, we displayed the record. And if it didn't meet the criteria, nothing happened. So we didn't really have an else. But in most logic, there is an else, and the next one shows that. So I'm saying here, if amount is greater than 5,000, do this calculation. Else, if it's no, do that calculation. So the no ends up being else. Okay, else, do a different calculation. So if it's true, do one calculation, else do another calculation. Okay? If you have questions, stop me. Okay, number three. This one is asking two questions in an and relationship. This is more like what you saw in Access. If the code is A and the amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. Only in Access I would have said display the message, or display the record, rather. If I get a no to either one of them, I am doing nothing, so I don't have an else. So the way I write it is, if inventory code equals A, I continue on with the yes, and I ask the second question. If amount is greater than 5,000, I do whatever it is I wanted to do. If it's not greater than 5,000, I do nothing. I still join the yes and the no to indicate I'm done. And if the code is an A, I stop right there and take the no. I still am joining the yes, which actually runs through that question, with the no. Okay, so when I draw it, that's the way I'm drawing it. The yes actually runs through the question. When you do the pseudocode, it is good style to embed the second if. It just makes it clearer. And by color, I've shown that this end if goes with that, and this end if goes with that. These circles are really the end ifs. So those are the end ifs. Questions? Okay. That could also be written in most languages as a compound, because I'm saying if inventory code equals A, and amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. So instead of writing out two if statements, I can compound them and say, if this is true and this is true, move OK. Okay. Questions? Okay, now on this one, I'm getting a little more complex. So if I look at the basic if statements over here, I'm saying if inventory code equals A, check and see if amount is greater than 5,000, and if it is, move OK to message. And I'm missing a quote there, and you'll probably see it missing lots of times because I do a lot of copying and pasting on these. So once it goes, it goes. So if both of those are true, I move OK to message. Then I have an else. And this else is attached to the if right above it. And that's the rule. An else will attach itself upward to the first available if. Available meaning it doesn't already have an else. So this else attaches to this. And I have else move problem to message. And then I end the if, and that also attaches. So that's all that. Then the next else goes with the no to the first question. If inventory code equals A, do that stuff. Else move problem to message. Okay? So this move problem to message is that one. This move problem to message is that one. This is basically the structure of coding if statements, and it's important if you're going to be working with logic and working with programming and working with scripting and everything. Questions? Okay, now, on the compound, I said, if inventory code equals A and amount is greater than 5,000, move OK. Else, move problem. And I can do that because these two are the same thing. Okay? So if I get a no to either question, I want to move problem to message. And since I don't care which question I got a no to, I can turn it into a compound. And you'll see on, I think, the next slide or a couple of slides in, if these are different, if this says move problem and this means says move whoops or whatever, then I can't compound them because I wouldn't know which to put here. But if they're single, I could keep one of them saying problem and one of them saying whoops. And I can make it say different things. Okay. So I could compound these because the no's warrant the same activity. Okay. Slide 7. Full zinc layer, that would help. Okay, so on this one, I decided if the amount wasn't greater than 5,000, I'd put out the word problem. But if it wasn't an A, I'd do nothing. So notice there is no else that goes with the A. If inventory code equals A, do all this stuff. If it doesn't, just drop down to the end if. Because I'm not doing anything. So, could I make this a compound?
Yes. Wait, no.
No.
I like no better.
Yeah.
Okay. Because what I would get here is, if inventory code equals A, and amount is greater than 5,000, move OK to message. Else. And then what do I put in the else? If the else is the problem is amount, then I move this message. If the problem and the else is that it's not code A, I have nothing to do. So what do I write in the else? I don't have anything I can put in the else because I don't know. So if I write the 2 out, okay, if I write the 2 out, if in then code equals A and amount greater than 5,000, move OK to message. And then I put an else. And then I say, okay, what do I put there? Well, if I'm going to say move problem to message, then if it's not an A, I get move problem to message showing up too. And that's not what I wanted. So I can't do this because I don't know, I can't pick something to put in the else that will work. Because I have different no responses. The no's are different. Does that make sense? That involves somebody indicating in some way that it makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. It's your job to ask questions when it doesn't make sense. And if you don't do your job, how about this one? Can this one be a compound?
Yeah.
No. Why?
Because there are two. You're having two different things to play.
That's right. In the else, if I made them a compound, in the else, which one do I put? One of them I want bad code, one of them I want problem. And you can see in the separate if statements, I can handle that. But if I compound them, I can't. Okay. So those are examples of and relationships. Now this one is an or relationship. Okay. Because I'm saying I want one of those two things to be true. So, if inventory code equals A, I move OK to message. Else, if amount is greater than 5,000, I move OK to message. Okay? And I don't have anything on the no over here, so I don't have anything to do. If amount is greater than 5,000, I run out of choices. So I'm saying here, basically, If the inventory code equals A, I want to move okay. If the amount is greater than 5,000, I want to move okay. If I don't get a yes to either of those, I'm going to do nothing. So does that work? Could I make a compound out of that?
Yes.
Yes. Because I can write, if inventory code equals A, or amount is greater than 5,000, move okay the message. And just not have an else. Okay. And I suspect I did that on the next slide. So we will look at the next slide.
Okay, sorry.
So I've got, if inventory code equals A, or amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. No else, because the else would be what I wanted to do over here. And then I just say, and if. So that works. I can have a compound there. Okay, with number 11, I've said if inventory code equals A, okay, move okay to message. If amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. Else, I want to move out the word problem. So again, this is an or relationship. If either of the things is true, I want to move okay. If I get a no to both of them, I want to move problem. Okay? Is this going to lend itself to a compound?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so I can say, if it's A, or amount is greater than 5,000, move okay to message. Else, move problem to message. Okay? So if either one or the other is true. And let's see, number 13. Can this be a compound?
No.
Why?
Because two different things are being.
That's right. If an inventory code equals A, I want to move the message that says code okay. If amount is greater than 5,000, I want to move the message that says amount okay. Okay, guys. Okay, guys, don't let him do all the work. Okay? I want a few other answers.
I'll be quiet.
Okay, so if I get a no to both of those, I'm putting out problem. But my problem is that I'm getting, if inventory code equals A, I want to do one thing. If amount is greater than 5,000, I want to do something else. And these are all kinds of things you encounter, whether you're doing business programming, game programming, networking, scripting for networking. You're going to encounter these kinds of issues over and over and over again. Okay, on the 14th one. So what one does this speak to? What's the logic they are saying? Okay, somebody brave, explain it to me.
I'm going to let someone else do it.
It looks like it's going to be a compound. But I don't know the rest of that.
Well, what has to be true?
What is displayed?
Right, but looking at this top of the star thing, what has to be true?
Inventory code equals A.
That's right. Inventory code doesn't equal A, I'm out of here, right? So remember the ones we did in Access where I said condition one and either condition two or condition three? Somebody's got to nod their head.
Yes.
Okay? then this follows that model. Because I'm saying if inventory code equals A, continue. If it doesn't, I'm out of here. So I'm basically saying inventory code has got to be A, and either of these two things have to be true. So this has to be true. And on this one, either of these things. Either must be true. One or the other of them must be true in order to get an okay. And if they aren't, then I do nothing. So if inventory code isn't an A, I do nothing. If amount first is not greater than 500 and amount second is not greater than 200, I do nothing. Okay. So, do you think I can make a compound out of this? Brave soul, say yes or no.
No. It's going to end up displaying two different things.
I bet I can. Because I'm going to say very much what I did up here. If inventory code equals A, that's condition one.
Okay.
And condition two is going to be that, amount first greater than 500, or amount second greater than 200. Okay, so if I look at the next slide, there it is. If I write if inventory code equals A and parenthesis either, why do I need the parenthesis? Because ands get resolved before ors. And if I don't have the parenthesis, it would take the two things around the and put them together, and the or would stand alone. Think back to access on the user interface. If I put the A on the criteria line, and amount first on the criteria line, and I put amount second on the or line, it would be A and amount first or just amount second. That's not what I've got here. What I've got here is A has to be true, so it would be on both the criteria line and the OR line. And then amount first would be on the criteria line, amount second would be on the OR line. But the A would be on both the criteria line and the OR line. And if you think to how this would be written in SQL, it would be written the same way I've done here. I would say select da-da-da-da where inventory code equals A and parenthesis amount first greater than 500 or amount second greater than 200. So it would be written the same way. It's just that I would not be saying move OK to message and access. I'd be saying display the record. Does that make sense? When you do it on homework, is it going to make sense?
Yes.
That's the key question. Does it make sense as in tomorrow morning? Will it make sense? Not does it make sense now. That's assuming you're going to do your homework tomorrow morning. You could also write it this way. If inventory code equals A, drop down to the next line. Is amount first greater than 500 or amount second greater than 200? So only if inventory code equals A do I hit that next question. If it's not equal to A, I drop out and go to the end if. So that's another way I could write that. If the inventory code equals A, then drop down and ask about amount first and amount second. I'm not able to read faces very well today. Most of you are not looking like I'm making a lot of sense, but then again, I'm not sure you're looking like you're paying a lot of attention, so I'm not sure which is which. So, try to give me some feedback. I do much better with feedback. Okay, so this is how it would work if I didn't use any parentheses. Inventory code equals A, and amount first greater than 500, move OK to message. If not, I get a second chance if I get a no to either of those, which is to ask, is amount second greater than 200? This is not what I wanted, but what this is saying is, if it's A and amount first is greater than 500, show it. Or, second chance, if amount second is greater than 200, show it. Okay, that's not what I wanted, but I might have wanted that. I might have wanted if inventory code equals A and this, or just that. Now I have to ask that twice, because I need it, if it's a no to the code equal A, I have to ask it, and if I get a no to the amount first, I have to ask it. Because these two are grouped. And this one stands alone without the parentheses. Parentheses change the order of operation so that the things in the parentheses get resolved first. Now, I don't like asking the same question twice because I'm lazy. So, if I have that individual question and I ask it first, doesn't matter what order I ask them. So I'm going to ask, is amount second greater than 200? And if not, then I'm looking for A and amount first. So if amount second, again, this is not what I wanted. This is if I forget the parenthesis. So if I forget the parenthesis, these two form a group, so I'm asking them together, and this one stands alone. So since it stands alone, if I ask it first, I don't have to write as much. Okay? Neither one is wrong. They're both right, if that's what I want. Again, this is without the parenthesis. So I'm saying condition three or both condition one and condition two. But if I have the parenthesis, it's a whole different world. And then I wrote it in code down at the bottom. Questions? Two more. Okay. In this one, I'm saying if inventory code is A, continue. If it's not, I'm out of here. If it is A, then I'm saying if amount first is greater than 500, move that message. If not, I have another chance. Is amount second greater than 200, move that message. If neither of them are true, move problem. This cannot be a compound because look at all the different messages. I have one message here, one message here, one message here, and over at the no and inventory code, I have do nothing. So that's a fourth option. I've got three different messages, or do nothing. So this one has to be written out with simple if statements, one right after another. So I'm saying, if the code is A, if the amount is greater than 500, write that message. Else means the no. If amount second is greater than 200, write this, else write problem. End that if an inventory code did not have an else. So I just end it. On the last one, inventory code gets an else. And so then I can put the else on that. So now I've got four different messages, so I have to write it out as four different things. Okay? Now, if this one had just said, okay, hello, guess not. Let's go. Click here to restore link. So I have to wait. Good, I should be able to run. Okay, so if I get rid of this, and I get rid of this, and I get rid of the word code, so it just says problem. Can I now have a compound?
Yes. So pretty much the only thing that dictates whether it could be a compound or not is having the same message ultimately at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
If I have the same message and if I act on everything and I don't just leave some things without action.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So basically this time I've got if inventory code equals A, and either amount first is greater than 500 or amount second is greater than 200, move okay to message, else move problem to message. Okay? So basically, if I go back, way back here, if I put, actually the next one is where I think it's the next one that I want to be at. Yes. Okay. So, if I end up putting problem, those two places, which is basically what I was doing. I've got move okay, I've got problem. Then inside here, I can say else move problem to message and if. And that works. Okay, because I'm saying if A and either of the others move okay, else, if there's a problem, just move problem. So that would work. Questions? Okay, we are going to go back for a minute and look at the flowchart pseudocode assignment and do the first example. So everybody should get number one correct. Okay. I got a new toy that let me draw flowcharts, and you can see how successful I was. Anyway, huh? Some kind of one, yes. I don't even remember what it was now. It was a couple of years ago. And my ability to successfully draw in it is extremely limited. So, wish you luck. I think you can follow what I'm doing here. But anyway. So, I drew a flowchart. And this flowchart will end up following. There's quite a few questions, and then there's another flowchart, and there'll be more questions, and then there's another flowchart and more questions, and then there's some pseudocode too. So I said, assume the following. One will be put in the memory variable called count. So So there's count, and I'm putting one in it. A will put be put in the memory variable called code. So I have A in that. 25 will be put in the memory variable called cost. After following the logic in the flowchart, what will be in the memory variable count? So go ahead and do it and then tell me. Okay, what's in count?
Zero.
Hmm?
Zero.
I was keeping my mouth shut.
Okay, does everybody buy that zero?
Yep.
Because what I do is I say, okay, if code equals A, does it equal A?
Yes.
Yes. Is cost greater than 50?
No.
So I take the no, and that says count equals count minus one. And so if it was one, count minus one is now zero, right? Okay, do the second one. Pardon me?
I may have gone ahead.
That's fine. Do the whole thing, it's just sitting here.
That's what I'm going to do.
That's fair.
So, number two, what's it going to be?
One.
Okay. So I said the memory variable count will contain your answer from problem one. So that's it, right? Zero. A will be put in code, and 100 will be put in cost. Okay? So now I come over here and I say, is code equal A? Yes. Is cost greater than 50? Yes. Add one to count. So count has gone back up to one. Okay? And these first four or five build. When I'm correcting them, if you make a mistake on number one, for example, as long as two, three, and four are, and five are, make sense after your mistake, then I don't take off for all of them. In other words.
So if it's making, if it builds upon as you go,
right.
I'll take off.
No, I'll get the one where you made the mistake.
Okay.
I'll take off for, but from there on in, when you're using that one, I won't take off. Okay. So that's the first two. If you go down, there's another one where I said the same kind of thing. State mass will be put in the memory variable state. 1987 will be put in the memory variable year, and et cetera. And you have to figure out what it would be. And then I've got a couple of them where I put the pseudocode and said, does this pseudocode accurately represent the logic in the flowchart? Okay, so if we look at this one, which is number 12, or number 13, rather. Okay, does this pseudocode match with that flowchart?
Yes.
can with those.
Did you see something that didn't match?
Uh-huh.
I say yes to this one, I think.
I'm sorry. I apologize. That's been happening so much. It's the drawing.
Yeah, right. Blame the drawing. Blame the drawing. Go ahead. Okay, so this one is asking. If you look at the pseudocode, the first question is state equal to mass? Well, that's the first question up there, right? So that's okay. Then I said, okay, if year is greater than 1980, is it greater than 1980? Yeah. What is it? Okay. So I'm going here with yes, I got a yes there. And then I'm saying, okay, is year greater than 1980, right? So that's the next question. So I'm taking that, so that works. And if the year is greater than 1980, what I want to do? I want to move okay to message, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going over here and moving okay to message. So that's working okay. Okay? If I give a no to the year greater than, then I take the else. And the else asks, is income greater than 50,000? And if it is, I move okay. And if it's not, I move problem. And then I end the if. And then I end that if. And then I end that if. And I didn't do anything on the side. So yes, the pseudocode is the same as the flowchart. Ask questions if you have them. Okay. So basically what I'm saying, you can start out with either one. You can start out up here and say, okay, state equals mass. Yes, that's the first thing it asks. If I get a yes to that, I want to ask 1980. Yeah, I'm getting asking 1980. If I get a yes to that, I want to move message okay. Yeah, I'm doing that. If I get a no to that, that's the else. I have another question to ask. Income greater than 50,000. If the message is okay, else if the message is a problem. As you're answering these, if you honestly can't figure out my handwriting, then put what you thought it said, and I will take that into consideration. Okay? But I was able to read that one, but then again...
You can read your own handwriting.
Sort of. Okay, so on this one, the answer would be yes, the pseudocode matches the logic. Okay? This is a quiz test, whatever you want to call it. It counts the same as a complex homework assignment. And the regular quizzes don't count as much as the complex homework assignment, the quick quizzes. So this is a do-it-yourself project, not a do-with-somebody-else. If you have questions for me or Eric, they should be of the kind of, I don't understand what's written there, as opposed to, I don't understand if this is correct, because this is more of a test. Okay? All righty. The next one I want to look at is focus on loops. And we probably won't make it through all the way. Well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. Okay. There are three structures involved in logic. Sequence, which means do this, then do this, then do this, then do this. Selection, which means ask a question and respond depending on the answer you got. And looping or iteration, which is where I go round and round and round. And essentially, this box here would ask a question to determine whether to do it again. So I come in and I ask the question, should I do it? If I do, I go over and this is where I process. And then I go back and say, should I do it again? And if I should, I go process, and then I go back and say, should I do it again? And it keeps going like that. And we'll look at some examples of that next. We've already looked at the sequence one today, so now we're going to look at the looping one. And we will continue that on Tuesday. So in this one, I said, I've got a condition. So I test the condition, and I go do the processing. Okay? So I test the condition. If the answer is yes, I do the processing. Then I go back, and I test again. Okay? And I keep doing that depending on the condition. So if the processing was add one to count, and I said in the condition, do until count is greater than 6, sooner or later I would get out because I'd keep adding one to count, it would get greater than 6, and then I'd get out. Okay? So, in this particular one, is it possible that you will never process?
Yes.
Depending on what the condition is, you might never process. Okay? No? Doesn't want to write? Okay, let's see. If I click on a pen here, will it now decide it wants to write? Yep. I might never process. Okay, so if, for example, if the condition, if I started out and I said count equals 5, and then in the condition I said do while count is less than 5, well, count isn't less than 5, so I'm never going to process. Okay, so I might never process. Okay, another kind of loop, and it's frequently called a do until, although different languages do whiles and untils differently. In this one, I come in and I process and then I check. So there's no check before I process. So on this one, if I said, okay, so it's decided that I'm going to have to click on that every time. On this one, if I had again set count equal to 5, and my condition was while count is less than 5, I would still process once, because it's not checking till after I process. So I would process once. Then it would say, if count is less than 5, continue. And I'd look up and say, wait a minute, count isn't less than 5, so I wouldn't go back up. I'd drop out. So I only process once. If, however, count starts out at 1, then I'll process a bunch of times. Okay? So if count starts out at 1, maybe the processing includes set count equal to count plus one, and the condition is if count is less than five. So I come in, I add one to count. Is it less than five? Yeah, it's up to two now. So I go back, I add one to count. Is it less than five still? Yeah, so I go back and I keep going through until I have added enough to count so that it's no longer less than five, and then I get out. Okay? So in one of these structures, there's the possibility I will never enter the loop. And in the other structure, I will always do it once. And the programmer has to decide which makes sense for them in the project that they're doing, which kind of loop they want. If they want to always do it once, they're going to pick this structure. If they wanted to maybe not do it, you're going to pick the other structure. Questions? Okay, so your book talks about an initializing read, and I ask you a question about initializing read. An initializing read basically means reading the first record so that you have something to process. Okay? So if you have an initializing read, then you read the record and you have something when you drop down to start work. If you don't read the initializing read, then you have a problem and you would have to put the read inside the loop, and we'll talk about that in a second. So if I have the initializing read and then I come down, and if the read is successful, very possible that the file has nothing in it, in which case the read is not successful and it's end of file. Okay. But most of the time a file that I've been told to read is going to have something in it. So I will get the first record and then I will check, as long as it's not EOF, which stands for end of file, as long as it's not end of file, I will process. And then I'll read the next record. Now, the nice part about this is I read the next record right before I go back to check. And so I read the record, and then I go back, and I immediately check to see if that read was successful. So I read, if I'm successful, it's not end of file, then I process and read, go back and check, as long as the read was successful, it's not end of file, and I keep processing and reading until I hit end of file. And we looked at something like this on Tuesday when I ran through four different records, okay? So this works. Now, if I don't have the initializing read, then I got to put the read inside the loop, which means it gets done first. And eventually, when I hit end of file, the read gets done first, and then I still try to process. So if I put the read inside, let's say I put it over here, I will read and then process, but if the read isn't successful, I still try to process. So it's a lot better to get the initializing read so you have something to process the first time, and then every other time read just before you check and see if you should process again. And that is a technique that people have used forever, and it works really well, and it's a nice way of writing the code. Okay. So, okay. So here I've got a counter, and I'm going to start it equal to a start point, and I'm going to stop it when I hit a stop point. The other one I was using in defile, this one I'm using a counter. Okay. The looping structure here has three components. The first is I initialize outside the loop. So let's say I decided my stop point is zero, so I can set count equal to zero. Or I can decide that my stop point is one, and I can set count equal to one. Okay, it depends on how you like to count, whether you want to start with a one or a zero. And then let's say I say my stop point is going to be five. So we'll say that I said, okay, my counter is going to be set at one, so my stop point is going to be one, and my stop point is going to be five. Okay, so I started out at one, and that's the initializing. I initialize the counter outside the loop to a specific start point. Then I test the counter to determine whether or not to enter the loop. Okay? So is counter less than stop point? Yes, it is. Because counter, I move one to there. So counter is now one. So counter is less than five, right? So therefore I go in and I process whatever I'm doing. Maybe I'm writing something out, maybe I'm doing a calculation, maybe I'm doing both of them. I do whatever processing it is that I have to do. And then I said, okay, increment the counter. So it's now two. I go back, is counter less than stop point? Yes. So I process and then I increment the counter. And I go back, is counter less than stop point? Yes, it is. So I process, and then I increment the counter. I go back, is counter less than stop point? Yes, it is. So I process, and I increment the counter. Then when I go back, is counter less than stop point? No. Five is not less than five. Five is equal to five. So therefore, at that point, I drop out. I take the no and do whatever it is that's down here below the no, but I take the no branch. Okay? So there are three things that have to happen here. I have to initialize, and that's what I did up here. I have to test the counter, and that's what I did here. And I have to increment the counter, which is what I did there. I have to change it. Okay? And if you don't change it, you don't get out. And so you'll do this, and it will go on forever. Because if I don't change the counter, it starts at one, the stop point is five. If I don't change the counter, it will go forever. Okay, until I pull the plug on it. So it's very important to remember those three things. And I guarantee you those will show up in a quiz sometime. Initialize the counter outside the loop. Test the counter. And increment the counter, change it. Okay? So we're setting, testing, and changing. In this case, I said increment. Actually, it could have been that I wanted to subtract one. It could be that I wanted to add 10. It could be anything. So maybe change is the better word. I have to change the counter. In this example, I'm incrementing, but what I've really got to do is change the counter. Questions? Okay, on this one, I will always process once. So if I have the same thing, if I have the start point, I set it to one, and I have the stop point. And you don't have to have these start and stop points. I could have said in here, counter equals one. Instead of saying counter equals start point, I could have said here, counter equals one. And here I could have said counter not equal to the stop point. Okay? So I, or not equal to five, sorry. I could have said not equal to five. So if I am going to do this, counter starts out at one. Okay? So I don't check, I just process. Okay, so I'm writing out a line. If I count one, I'm writing out a line. So I process. Let's say I wrote out a line. Okay, so if count is one, I dropped in, I wrote out a line. And now I'm incrementing counter, and it's a two. And I'm asking, is it equal to the stop point? No, two is not equal to five. So I go back and I process. So now count two is being processed and I'm writing a line. Then I increment the counter and it goes up to three, okay? And I say, is the counter not equal to stop point? It's not equal. So I go back up and I process. So if a counter equals three, I'm writing out a line. Then I increment counter. So it's now up to four. Counter not equal to stop point, it's not equal to four. So I go back and I process. And then I increment counter. And when I get down here, is counter not equal? They are equal. So I stop. Okay. Same thing that I had to initialize. I had to change the counter, and I had to test the counter. Okay? And every loop has to have those three things. Questions? Okay. I think we've hit saturation level. Okay. So, what I'm going to do is say you got about 15 minutes. Take a look at that flowchart and pseudocode assignment. Try a few of them and let me know if you have questions. So we're just going to do some hands-on on this. Next week, we will do some more with loops, and I'll give you an assignment using loops. But this week, we'll focus on mostly if statements. So, see if you can get the assignment mostly done.